So welcome. So why don't we start this morning with a little meditation. So if you are, how many of you have been here before or have sat before or meditated before? I guess how many haven't? I mean, that's what I meant to ask. Oh, good, none. Which makes my job easy, I guess. So if you've been here before and you remember Geshe-la's instructions, right? So we'll meditate on the breath, right? We'll focus, use the breath as our object of meditation. And you can remember his instructions, which is to begin with an out-breath, right? You go, then, right? So that's the first, you know, if you're counting to 21, that's the first, that's one, right, on the in-breath. If you, you know, we'll probably do a little bit more than 21, so we'll probably maybe meditate for maybe 10, 15 minutes maybe, if that's not too long. If you get tired in the middle, the instructions are to just relax your mind. Not your body necessarily, but just relax your mind for a few minutes, and then you can start again, right? So if you're having trouble with concentration, one can always do that. So you can make small segments out of it, out of the longer meditation, right? So let's do that. But before that, we should do our prayers. Does someone remember the page that we normally do it on? I remember it on the big sheet, but especially the four immeasurables. Do you remember what page that's on? 34. Ah, there we go. Perfect. So we'll do the four immeasurables, but before that we'll do Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, which, where is it? Somehow it used to be really simple when they used to have the one page. But you probably remember, Om Mune Mune Maha Mune Soha, right? So we'll just do that. Hmm? 183. Okay. I should get a cheat sheet. Okay, so they will do Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra first. Dayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Dayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Dayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. And then we'll turn back to page 34, and we'll do the four immeasurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So let's take a couple of minutes, just a couple of minutes, to think about what the four immeasurables means to us. We say the words, but what do they mean? And then we can, with that motivation, we can start our meditation. So this morning, I guess last week, I was thinking, okay, so I'm supposed to lead this morning's session. So what should we think about, right? And, you know, one of the things that I really, that came up was, you know, I don't know if, I know some of you here in this room had been in the presence of Chöden Rinpoche. He came here in 2007, something like that. I had just moved here from California in 2006. I think it must have been 2007. So he didn't pass away, but his body passed away at least, week ago Friday. And so, I was just thinking about him because, he was one of my first teachers in this tradition, the Gelugpa tradition. I met him even before I met Lama Zopa Rinpoche, those of you who know Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And he gave me my lay vows almost 20 years ago now, something like that. So he was a very, and I've kept, I had kept my relationship with him over the years, and so he was very special to me, And so it affected me greatly, and I was thinking, what is it about his death that we can learn about our life, how to live a meaningful life, like Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, how to live a meaningful life, right? So I wanted to kind of give you, tell you a little bit about his life. And then the Sarajay Monastery, his attendant at Sarajay Monastery, wrote a couple of pages about his last few months of his life, what it was like. So I wanted to read it to you so you could get an understanding of what these great beings are like and how they're going to be an example to us, right? So anyway, so Chöden Rinpoche, so he was 91, 92, something like that when he passed away. And so he grew up he was one of the last remaining great masters from old Tibet. Right? There's only a few others remaining. There's Kempo Kartar Rinpoche, who is not in the Gelugpa tradition. He's in the Sakya tradition, or rather the Kagyu tradition, and he's up in upstate New York. But, along with Chöden Rinpoche, there was Geshe Sopa, who died last year at Wisconsin. So like that, so he was one of the last remaining great masters from old Tibet. And so he grew up before the Chinese invaded, and he had finished his studies for the most part. And so His Holiness Dalai Lama's, when he died, His Holiness was getting his Geshe degree in 1958, something like that, because the Chinese invaded in 1959. So Chöden Rinpoche was His Holiness's debate examiner. So His Holiness had to debate against him in front of hundreds of thousands of monks. And so Chöden Rinpoche was his kind of, the guy who was examining him, right, on the two truths. So His Holiness later said that that's what Chöden Rinpoche debated him on, was the conventional truth and ultimate truth, which is, it's, those of you who know, is like the highest, realizing those is the highest form of realizations in Buddhism. So when the Chinese invaded, so he had finished most of his studies, and then the Chinese invaded and, they imprisoned, a lot of people, a lot of monks and nuns left, of course, as you know. Rinpoche didn't. And he was kind of like the, even though he was a recognized incarnation, which was a dangerous thing to be during, at that time, because you were automatically basically separated and, got the worst of it. But even though he was a recognized incarnation, he never really, like, lived quite like that. You know, he lived among the, you know, ordinary monks. So he kind of led an ordinary life with them. He didn't have a special, you know, like, recognized incarnations, you know, they have their own house and, you know, in the monastery, and they, you know, they have their own setup and everything, right? So he didn't have any of that stuff, right? So he kind of just lived in a little room. And so he was kind of, you know, not special in that way. And so the Chinese kind of, you know, treated him a little bit, you know, not like the other incarnations, right? So he kind of wasn't persecuted as much. So anyway, so he stayed. But even though they didn't persecute him so much, they basically had him under house arrest for 19 years. So he lived in his cousin's house, if I can remember correctly, in this one room for 19 years. The room had no windows, had one, if I remember correctly, they changed rooms too in the same house, but either way, both the rooms, they didn't have any windows, and they had, one room had just like a little ventilation, like a little thing at the top of the door so you know, the air could come in. So that was it, right? And it was pretty, his attendant later said, I walked in there and it was so dark, I couldn't even, it took a while for the eyes to adjust, you know, it was that dark. So anyway, so he lived in there and he wasn't allowed any books, you know, and or altar or pictures or any implements, you know, like for doing practice, you know, like the bell and dirje and all that stuff. So all he had was his mala, his rosary. And of course, all the texts in his head, right? And the Chinese would come two or three times a day to make sure there weren't any pujas happening, because that would be you would be hauled off, right? So he pretended to sleep the whole time, essentially. So he would basically be on his bed. During the day, he would sit up in bed, and at night, he would just lie down in bed. And he would pretend he was asleep essentially the whole time. And he actually had a heart ailment too. So they kind of like, he was able to kind of use that as an excuse to kind of, you know, get away with it. But he said, so anyway, so for 19 years, he was essentially in solitary confinement, right? There was one guy who would come in twice a day with his food and empty his bedpan and stuff like that. And so he was in solitary confinement for 19 years in the dark for the most part. And he did his practices. And so he said that those were the greatest years of his life. And so it was kind of like, you know, being like those old, you know, like in the old days where you go off to a cave, you know, and just do your practice, except that he got to do it in a room. And he said that it was wonderful. And so, he had, of course, been trained under the great, you know, the Trijang Rinpoche, who is the one who, when you read Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, he is the one who, you know, Pabongka Rinpoche didn't write the book, right? Trijang Rinpoche, Pabongka Rinpoche gave the teachings over 20-some days in 1926, I think it was. And Trijang Rinpoche was there, and he took notes. And so the Liberation in the Palm of Our Hand that you read is actually Trijang Rinpoche's transcription of his notes from Pabongka Rinpoche's teachings from 1926. So Trijang Rinpoche was Chodron Rinpoche's teacher. And so Trijang Rinpoche had told him that the greatest benefit you can do is actually teach, stay in monastery and teach and not go off into retreat, because that only helps yourself. You know, if you just spend all your life in retreat, that only is a benefit to yourself. So Rinpoche, Chodron Rinpoche, when he was able to leave in 1985, he decided to teach, right, instead of just continuing in retreat. So, he came to Dharamsala to visit His Holiness in 1985, and then he was in Sarajay for like 15 years. He taught in Sarajay. I'm sure Geshe-la, for example, you know, took teachings from him and so forth, so on, right? So Geshe-la must have known him. And so then he started traveling, and he came to the U.S., I think, in 2000. That's when I saw him, maybe late 90s, I don't know when, but that's when I met him first. And And, you know, he was just an amazing, if you were in his presence, you know, he didn't say much. You know, he really didn't say all that much, and he laughed just once in a while. You know, he would kind of have this laugh, you know, when he was remembering something, or he made a, you know, he quote-unquote made a mistake, you know, and he would laugh, right? And so, but, you know, he didn't say much, but he was, when you were in his presence, you knew that there was, he was not an ordinary being like that. So you could feel the energy, definitely. You know what I mean? You could definitely feel the energy. So anyway, so he gave many, you know, he gave many teachings and he gave many retreats, and I was fortunate at the time that I was living near, you know, all the places that where he was teaching, and so I was able to go to a lot of them and, you know, and to his retreats, and there were a lot of his students who were very, very, you know, quite, you know, I've been in touch with some of them, you know, those of us, his students, and, you know, very, not devastated, but, you know, we feel like we lost a true father. You know, that's how basically kind of most of us feel. So anyway, so I wanted to kind of read to you his last few months, because we can get an understanding of, you know, we kind of have, you know, we have this view of, you know, of these great teachers, but we don't quite know what they're, how they conduct themselves, right? I mean, we see them, like, when they're teaching and so forth and so on, but it's interesting to see the last, you know, how they died, because it's a lesson to us. And we can talk about what Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, et cetera, had to say about it, you know, afterward. But anyway, so I'll just read you the whole thing, and they're in parts. There's some technical jargon which I might say something about. I don't know. We'll see. So it says, dear students and friends, with great sadness, we must convey to you the news of His Eminence Chodron Rinpoche's passing into Dharma Dhatu at 1:30 a.m. on September 11th, 2015, in his labrang, which means his house, at Sarah J. Monastery. As most of you know, last year in July, the glorious protector of the teachings and sentient beings, endowed with great understanding of the five sciences, that's medicine, craftsmanship, logic, grammar, and the inner science of Buddhism, His Eminence Chodron Rinpoche, the supreme Jetsun Losang Galten Jigdril Wangchug, manifested the state of illness from the perspective of ordinary disciples. However, through the fortunate convergence of the power of the blessing of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's compassion, the sincere requests of his disciples that Rinpoche may live long and stable like a Vajra, and with meticulous medical care, the illness temporarily receded, and Rinpoche was able to bestow the vast, essential, hard-to-find teachings on profound sutra and tantra, especially the Manjushri Chokor cycle, to fortunate disciples in the main temple of Sarajay. So this was last year. I was surprised. I knew that he was ill. And so this was last year. And year before, in December, he started kind of teaching the Manjushri cycle. So he did that for quite a while. So that's what they're talking about. His illness had receded for a while. In recent months, due to insufficient merit of us, his disciples, Rinpoche's illness reached a critical state, each day becoming progressively more severe according to the doctor. Concerned by this condition, Rinpoche's close disciples requested His Holiness and Dalai Lama for an observation. Observing ominous signs, His Holiness invited Rinpoche to meet him in Delhi, because Rinpoche couldn't travel to Dharamshala, he was too ill. On August 29th, His Holiness held a relaxed meeting with Rinpoche in his hotel room in Delhi. The following day, Rinpoche comfortably arrived at his home in the great seat of Sarah. From September 4th to 8th, together with senior Geshis and Tulkus, Rinpoche engaged in the self-initiation of his main tantric deities, Guja Samaja, Heruka Chakravsamvara, Yamantaka, Chittamanitara, and Vajra Yogini. Disciples observed that Rinpoche performed the recitations precisely without break. during that time in accordance with the words of the texts from the state of single-pointed meditation, taking the three bodies into the path. Rinpoche also performed the hand mudras without omission or redundancy. The hand mudras are, you know, the mudras that you do while you're doing the tantric practices. And Rinpoche, at this time, was actually, I saw a couple of pictures of him. He was like a skeleton. I mean, he was very, very weak. So to do all these things was, you know, I mean, it takes an incredible, strength and determination, etc. So he performed all the hand mudras without omission or redundancy. On the 8th, having completed well the rituals of self-initiation, Rinpoche showed the aspect of great contentment and gave his final instructions for the future to his disciple Geshe Gyaltun. These instructions included directions for the pujas and prayers to be done after his passing and in the future, and in the future, advice for the running of awakening Vajra centers. Those are like a few centers he has around the world. And indications regarding his next incarnation. Then Rinpoche requested, please bring some nice fruit and yogurt, and he consumed it. We think Rinpoche was acting in accordance with the advice of past masters that for the final meal, a practitioner should take pure white food. White foods are, black foods are those that bring up, not negative, but they've disturbed the mind. They bring up negative energies, if you will. So, you know, like when you're in retreat and you're fasting, you know, during the day, right? So you're only supposed to eat certain types of, you know, like liquids and so forth and so on. That's the reason, is because that stops, you know, the negative energies from rising. So he's preparing for his own death, right? So that's why he's only eating white foods. From that point onwards, Rinpoche stopped taking medicine and gross food, staying without break in profound meditation. Several times, Rinpoche requested his disciples to make extensive offerings in front of his altar. Then he would ask, please take me to the altar, and would make prayers in front of the representations of the three jewels. Rinpoche spent an especially long time making prayers in front of the statue of the Supreme Aryavalokiteshvara, the Buddha of Great Compassion. On the evening of the 10th, this is the night before he died, on the evening of the 10th, Rinpoche sat on his throne in the full Vajra posture and successively displayed his hands in the two teaching mudras. You know, that's the one you see, you know, like when they, like they go like this, or they go like this, right? So, they're the two teaching mudras. Finally, he lay down in the lion posture. So the lion posture is when the Buddha died, that's his supine position. When the Buddha died, he died with his, on his right side, with his left foot over his right, you know, stretched out, and his hand and his head like this. So that's called the lion's posture. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche has given instructions for us to go to sleep in that posture. But anyway, so finally he lay down in the lion's posture, as the Buddha had done. Though lamas may display many different postures at the time of death, there's no difference in the manner of passing away. Rinpoche calmly advised, mainly it is important to remember the kindness of the Buddha and abide in that remembrance. So that was his last words. And added a verse from Arya Nagarjuna's words. He said, whatever a yogi observes, he should view it as like an illusion, similar to a reflection in a mirror, a dream, a mirage, a water bubble, or a trick of the eye, so he should see it. The Buddha said, that is the main insight. As he finished speaking, Rinpoche entered a state of meditation. Remaining in that state, at 1:30 a.m. on September 11th in his room in the Labrang, in order to inspire towards the Dharma his disciples grasping at permanence, Rinpoche progressively actualized the three emptinesses and the clear light, finally showing the aspect of dissolving his mind into Dharma Dhatu. All the respectful disciples will be left in a sad state on account of his news. We kindly request all concerned organizations. And they talks about the different prayers, etc. to do. We offer sincere thanks to all of Rinpoche's disciples, etc., etc., etc.
The interesting thing about it is that the exam, you know, I mean, when great beings like this come into this world, right? They don't come into this world because they need to come into this world. They come into this world because they are, they're an example to us. And so, in his death, you can see what it can be like, right? Because, as Lama Zopa Rinpoche has said, you know, he meets all kinds of people in, you know, airports and trains, on planes, and some of them will come up and say, you know, I'm not a believer, right? You know, I don't believe in Buddhism, I don't believe in Christianity, I'm an atheist, let's say, whatever it is. But Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he says that all of them face fear at the time of death, right? So one of the greatest thing that we can, in this life, right, that Lama Zopa Rinpoche had said, I have to keep saying Lama Zopa Rinpoche, because otherwise if I say Rinpoche, then it's confusing which Rinpoche we're talking about. But one of the things that Lama Zopa had said is important is, in this life, to learn how to be at the time of our death, right? Because we are all going to die. It's not a depressing thing. I mean, this is not about being depressed about our death, right? But it's knowing how to conduct ourselves when that time comes. Because that time will come, maybe sooner than we think, right? And so that's one of the greatest trainings that we can do in this life. And the reason is that one of the things that governs, has a great effect on how our next life is, right? What environment we are born into, whether we're in the higher realms or the lower realms, you know, animal or human or God realm and other realms. What type of family, what type of environment, you know, what type of, you know, faculty, mental faculty we have in that life, and so forth and so on, our mental state at the time of death has a great impact on that. If our mental state at the time of death is fear, then chances are that our life, the next life, will not, you know, may not be as good as we would like it to be. I don't know what the next life is going to be like. And I don't remember exactly Rinpoche's words, what he said, you know. He might have said something about the hell realms. But anyway, nevertheless, if we die at the time of our death, if we die with fear, then, you know, it's not necessarily a good thing. But if at the time of death, we are able to die with equanimity, with grace, with courage, without regrets, you know. So then we can, most likely, we're going to have a pretty good rebirth. Because all those things means, you know, if we are able to, you know, we don't get equanimity at the time of death by being just a terrible person the rest of our life, right? You know? Or courage, or grace, or fearlessness, or all those things, right? It means that the previous 70, 80, however many years of our life, we must have practiced, right? Only then can we have those qualities at the time of our death. So, So that's why it's so important to practice during our life. Right? Because it's not just you know, when they say, you know, we're practicing for all future lives and, you know, for the benefit of sentient beings and so forth and so on, one of the things, it's because, you know, so that we can have a human life the next time around, right? So that we can continue to make progress, not just for our own benefit, right? But for the benefit of others, those around us. Because we have a karmic connection, right? With the people we know today, right? Your family, or my family, and my friends, and those of you I know here, you know, we have a karmic connection, right? So chances are, in our future lives, we will be traveling together in some form or fashion, right? So we can continue to benefit each other, right? So it's not just for the spiritual progress, and not just for our own. Actually, in Buddhism, in Mahayana Buddhism, certainly, spiritual progress is not for our own benefit, primarily anyway. It's for the benefit, you know, the motivation is to benefit others, because only then, because if we remove our self-cherishing mind, that's what Lama Zopa had said, if we remove our self-cherishing mind, only then can we gain happiness. It's counterintuitive. It's only for working for the happiness of others can we gain happiness for ourselves, right? We think it's the other way around. But it's only for the benefit, if we are able to work for the benefit of others, only then can we bring happiness for ourselves. And anyway, so that there's a long teaching about that. So we have to practice in this life to have the type of, you know, death that Chödön Rinpoche, you know, showed us, right? And as he said, and then, and as his students said, late, at the end of it, he said, you know, in order to, he remaining in that state, he blah, 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 in order to inspire towards the Dharma, disciples grasping at permanence, right? Because we think, you know, all of us are grasping at permanence, right? All of us want him to stay forever, but we, you know, because we don't think that he's gonna go, right? Every year, you know, when he used to come, you know, when he used to, you know, after I moved away from California, when I moved here, I tried to, you know, it's important for all of us, you know, to continue to, those of us who have teachers, and even actually, you know, if you come to the center and Geshe-la is here, Geshe-la is a great qualified teacher, right? If you're taking instruction, you know, if we're coming to Geshe-la's teachings and if we gain benefit from it, right? Then, you know, Geshe-la is like a teacher. You have to, of course, you know, make that, it's up to you to make that commitment, if you will, right? But Geshe-la is like a teacher to you, right? To all of us. And thank you. So we have to cultivate that relationship, because these teachers are the ones who show us the path, right? Like Chödön Rinpoche did for me when I first met him. And then, of course, after that, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, after that, Geshe-la, after that, other teachers like Venerable Rene that I've met, you know, so forth and so on, right? You know, other teachers. But we have to continue to cultivate that relationship. We have to continue to strengthen that bond, because only then can we make the spiritual progress, right? Because they show us the example, right? Because they have traveled a path before us, or they are traveling the path as we speak, right? Like Geshe-la. You know, his humility, his, you know, his constant patience, really, you know. I mean, he doesn't have to be here to teach us. You know, he could go back to Sarah J. You know, he would be just fine. I mean, he has students there. He'd be taken care of. I mean, he doesn't need to be here. He's here only because we need him. You know, he wants to help us, right? So we have to see it like that, right? And if we can see our teachers and can cultivate that relationship, then we are the ones who benefit, right? It's not from their side, you know. It's the benefit doesn't come from their side, right? The benefit comes from our side, from our attitude. So if we are able to be like them, if we can see them and be like them, and want to be like them, you know, see them as an example, then we can practice our lives in a meaningful way, right? Because we are put, because when we see them, when we cultivate that relationship and we want to be like them, then we automatically want to follow their instruction, right? So when Geshe-la says, you know, practice bodhicitta, mindfulness, so forth and so on, you know, gives instructions, right? Because he does that every Sunday. He essentially is giving us instructions every Sunday, even though it's couched in different words, right? It's not, doesn't, he doesn't say do A, B, C, and D, but he is saying, he is telling us. So if we see it as instruction we put into practice, then our lives become happier, right? And our deaths become happier. And on and on, right? Because if we make that, if we cultivate that relationship with Geshe-la, if we cultivate that relationship with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, when he comes, he will come again next September. I urge all of you to come and visit him. If you are able to go to his retreat, please go, because that's how we make the connections, right? We continually make the relationships and make the connections. And that way, we make a karmic connection with them, right? So that the next life, when we're in our current body are no longer here and their current body is no longer here, we can continue to still meet them, right? Because we have created a connection, right? And continue to make progress, right? Because it's a long path. It's not just, you know, as one of my teachers said, I was discouraged once some number of years ago because I didn't feel I was making much progress and I hadn't seen, you know, him in a long time, maybe a couple of years. And we were taking a walk and he took his mala off his wrist and he said, oh, you see this mala? And I said, yeah. So what, you know? And he said, you see this bead? This is this life. You've got a lot more to go. So don't get discouraged because you've got a lot more chances coming, right? There are a lot more. You don't have to do everything in this life, right? So you've got many, many more opportunities, right? But we have to, so that was helpful, but we have to set our path, right, so that we can continue to get to the next bead. Because the next bead means that we have to be born as a human being. Right? It's hard to practice if we're born as an animal, let's say. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. Because we don't have the mental faculties necessarily to discriminate. You know, you have to be quite lucky to go around a stupa. You know, somebody has to lead you around or, you know, whatever. So it's hard to practice if we're not born as a human being, right? So we have to create the causes to be born as a human being. And of course, the causes to be born as a human being is to practice ethical behavior, right? That's the main cause to be born as a human being. You know, there's other causes for other positive things that happen in our lives, right? Like patience, they say, brings physical attraction. Beauty, physical beauty. You know, if you're attractive, let's say, right? If you have an attractive personality, attractive body, whatever it is, then you must have practiced patience, you know. Or if you're generous, then that brings wealth. Or, yeah, so forth and so on, right? But ethical behavior is a main contributor to a human life, right? A precious human life. You know, the most precious of all lives, including the God realms. And you can read the Lam Rim as to why that is. So that's why practicing in this life, having a meaningful life, is so important, right? Is so that, and cultivating the relationships with our teachers, seeing them as our teacher, you know, seeing the importance of, you know, the teachings, right? Because only then are we willing to follow it, right? Not with blind faith, Because remember what the Buddha said, you know, it's not, blind faith is not what you want to have, questioning faith, right? You want to question, you want to examine, and then you want to see that the teachings really work for us. And then, if follow it, right? Follow it fully, right? Not, I was going to say religiously, but I guess religiously, you know? Follow it religiously. Because then we are, you know, we are convinced of its value, right? So if we're able to do all those things, then we have a meaningful life, we have a happy life, we are able to bring others happiness, and our deaths are peaceful, right? And we can continue on like that, life after life after life, right? So these are the things that came to my mind when I read Rinpoche, you know, these two pages, you know, because the greatest thing that we can do when our teachers pass away is to follow their teachers. Well, actually, the greatest thing we can do even when they're alive, in fact, we should be doing it when they're alive. They say the greatest gift you can give to your teacher, the greatest gift, is to follow his teachings. I mean, not money, not offerings, not prostrations, not, you know, respect. All those things are, of course, important, right? I mean, we should be doing all of those things. But the greatest gift you can give, it says in the Lamrim, is to follow their teachings. Because that is what brings them the greatest happiness, right? Because they're doing it because they want to see us progress, right? And we try their patience constantly because they're having, you know, we're dense. They're having to repeat themselves all the time, same things over and over again, right? That's why it says, you know, patience is one of those virtues, 10 virtues that you should look for in a spiritual teacher, right? Patience, diligence, patience, etc., right? Somebody who doesn't get discouraged, that's actually the word. They don't get discouraged because we try their patience. That's the quality that you, one of the qualities in the 10 qualities of a teacher. So, you know, they're doing it from their, because they want to benefit. Geshe-la is here, as I was saying, you know, because he wants to be a benefit to us, right? So the greatest gift we can give him is to bring him happiness. And the way to do that is to follow his teachings, right? And so when our teachers pass away, of course, as you know, Chön Rinpoche himself said here, right? He said, Rinpoche commonly advises, last words were, mainly it is important to remember the kindness of the Buddha, or our teachers, and abide in that remembrance, right? To follow their teachings, right? So because, to actualize their teachings. So, Lama Zopa had said that, you know, that the greatest obstacle we have is our self-cherishing mind. Right? That's the greatest obstacle. And he said that, if you're doing nothing else, at least have the motivation of benefiting others. If you're doing nothing else, no practice, no meditation, no prayers, no nothing, right? He said, make that your heart practice, right? That you are always thinking of benefiting others. Whatever you were doing, at least have the motivation in the back of our minds, right? Even if the action may not be of obvious benefit, right? But we should have that motivation. If we have that motivation, that immediately counteracts our self-cherishing mind, right? It first of all, it removes obstacles, right? Because the self-cherishing mind is our greatest obstacle. It causes all our, you know, all the negative, you know, things that are in our way, whether it's in our families, whether it's in our work, whether it's in our practice, whether it's in, you know, making spiritual progress, whether it's meeting teachers, whether all those things, right, that we struggle with in our spiritual life and in our worldly life, right? All those obstacles, the root cause of it is a self-cherishing mind. Right? Because we're continuously creating, we're continuously committing actions of body, speech, and mind that are not constructive, I guess. Right? And that creates negative energies, negative karma, negative merit, whatever you want to call it, right? That comes to fruition as obstacles in our lives. And so, if we are able to just have the motivation of benefiting others, then, number one, it becomes difficult, it's more difficult at least, to commit negative actions. Right? So that's an automatic removal of obstacles, future obstacles, right? We don't create any new reasons for future obstacles. And the other thing, of course, is that it has a double benefit. The other benefit is that it creates positive merit, for creates a cause and conditions for good things to happen in our future, right? To make spiritual progress, to have harmonious families or work and so forth and so on, right? So benefiting others, you know, has this double quality, right? It removes obstacles, it purifies, if you will, right? And it creates the causes for our future happiness from life to life to life, you know, to meet our teachers again, to have human lives, you know, so forth and so on, right? To have mental faculties so that we can continue to practice and so forth and so on, right? All those things come from removal of the self-cherishing mind, right? So his instructions, I only have a few more minutes. So his instructions for how to live a meaningful life, Lama Zopa Rinpoche's instructions, is to, you know, as I said, always have that motivation, but how to put it into practice, right? So, you know, you can read, for example, there's a great book that's at the bookstore. I think it's even free, if I'm not mistaken, called The Bodhisattva Attitude, which is it's a condensation of a lot of his teachings from various places, right? And it talks about how to lead a life like that, right? Where we are thinking about benefiting others. But to put it into practice during the day, you know, he advises all his students to, you know, so for example, when you first begin the day, the first thing as you're getting out of bed, you think, how wonderful I have another day. Right? Because it's not guaranteed. I did a calculation once overnight, you know, during the 8 hours or 7.5 hours that I'm asleep, there's somewhere on the order of 10 or 20 or 30,000, I don't remember, people who have died in this world, right? If you look up the statistics, you can do the calculation. So, just, and that's the kind of person I am. It's just interesting to me. So, it's easy to have been one of those people, you know? So, how wonderful it is that I have another day, right? And the second thing, the next thing to think is, with this day, may I only be of benefit to others. Whatever I do today, may I be of benefit, may I bring happiness, whatever I do, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to succeed, right? I mean, we are human beings, we're going to do things that are probably not all that constructive, you know, because our minds are still not developed. But if we set that motivation, we at least have some chance, right? If we don't set the motivation, we have no chance. Right? I can't remember who said this, but somebody said this once. A great teacher. I don't mean like, you know, somebody just... A great teacher. I read this. It's in the sutras, but I don't remember which one. But anyway, it said, all great things begin at the tip of a wish. Right? So you have to have the wish first. Right? Then everything else follows, if we can follow that wish, right, from step to step by step by step, right? So like that, if we set that motivation in the beginning of the day, we have a chance of having engaging in positive actions, constructive behavior throughout the day, right? And you can read his Lama Zopa's book, but you know, all the things that you do during the day, you can transform it into something positive, right? So, for example, when you're drinking a cup of coffee, you can offer it to the Buddhas or your teachers, you know? So like that, right? You make an offering. Same thing as you're eating. When you're washing the dishes, you can think, you know, with this, you know, I'm washing away all the dirt and stains in my mind and in others' minds. May their stains be removed, right? Or we're, you know, there's lots of them actually. And this is not just, by the way, this is not Rinpoche making these up, okay? I'm not going to read it out today, but I actually have it from a sutra from the 5th century in Sanskrit where he actually talks about going down the stairs. You know, you go down the stairs and you think, you know, I'm going down to bring, you know, to relieve the suffering of all the hell beings, right? You walk up the stairs, you think, I'm walking up to, I think in the sutra it says, you know, to salvation and bringing all the beings with me, you know? One of the things Rinpoche says, for example, is if you're walking, taking a walk, you can transform it too, because what you can think is, all the statues, stupas, scriptures, and the Buddhas and the teachers are all on your right. Right? So as you're walking, you're circumambulating. It's constantly circumambulating, right? And all the beings are behind us. You know, all our family, all our friends, all the beings in the universe are behind us. So they're following us. We're leading them along to ultimate happiness, right? So like that, you can use your imagination, but everything in the day can become like that. So actually, one of the things I've started doing, and it's actually has changed the way I look at things, is often my work is quite stressful. I have a lot of deadlines, right? So it's a lot, very stressful. I have a deadline actually end of next week, which I'm not going to meet. So I'm under great stress right now. But what it used to get me down a lot, you know? So then I started thinking, okay, what would Rinpoche do? What would Rinpoche say to ask me, tell me to do, right? So I started thinking about, so whenever I go, you know, whenever I'm feeling stressed, I'm thinking, okay, I'm doing this because, you know, my boss won't have to stand in front of the customer and explain why we didn't meet the deadline, right? So I'm helping him if I can get this done, right? Like that, right? It actually does help, believe it or not. You know, takes some effort. But, you know, we have to be able to transform our minds. You know, that's what Geshe-la talks about every Sunday, right? So throughout the day, we can change, you know, how we, it's all about our attitude, right? Everything that happens is because of our attitude. It's not the action of somebody else's action inherently. Those of you who have been going through this, right? You know that the actions that are somebody's outside is doing to us, supposedly, is not the inherent problem. Right? It doesn't have that inherent nature to it, right? It's our attitude. It's how we see it, right? So if we're able to change the way we see things, right, then it change, you know, we don't, it doesn't affect us, right? That's why Rinpoche has no fear of death here, right? We see death differently than he does, right? He doesn't see an inherent, death doesn't have an inherent substance to it. For him, right? For us, it does. And so that's why we have such fear and so forth and so on, right? You know, my mother died last year, right? Actually, a year ago this week. Yeah, this week. And I remember the fear that she had. You know, a great fear. So that's, you know, I mean, so that's the kind, you know, that's what we have to avoid, right? If we practice during our lives, following our teacher's instructions, making it meaningful, following, you know, having a bodhicitta attitude, the attitude of compassion for benefiting others, we can change that, right? So that's the great example that these great beings give us in their life and in their death. And lastly, what Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, so he instructs, well, you know, you get up in the day and you think about how wonderful it's, et cetera. And then throughout the day, you think about how to transform that action into something beneficial, right? And so his last instruction, the end of the day, is to think back through the day and rejoice in whatever positive actions we have done, right? So be really glad, actually not just glad, rejoice, right? Be happy that we were able to do those things, right, that were beneficial, that we did things that were constructive. You can pat yourself on the back, I guess, you know, like that, because we deserve it. And the second thing is that to think about the things that we did that weren't so constructive and think about them with great regret, right? Those of you who know, you can do the Vajrasattva practice, but you don't have to. You can think about it with great regret that, you know, we did something that was not positive, maybe mean, we gossiped, you know, we, whatever we had, you know, and these are thoughts, these are not just actions of body and speech, right? There's actions of mind as well, right? Thoughts going through our head, right? So these are all, so we can think through those actions and we have a great sense of regret and then make a resolution that we won't do it, not again, because that's a promise we can't keep. But we won't do it for some length of time that is reasonable. Right? So if it's something that we do very often, because it's a habit, then choose a length of time that's relatively short. Because you can keep that promise then, right? If it's something we only do once a week, then choose 2 weeks as a length of time. Whatever it is, right? But we make a resolution. So great regret and resolution, because then what that happen means is that we will try not to do those kind of things very often. And so our lives will be ethical. You know, we will have, you know, equanimity, happiness, you know, free from fear, all those things. And we will continue to progress from life to life, right? So anyway, so those are all the things that came to my mind when I read about Rinpoche's passing, right? Is what an example our teachers are to us, right? And we have to continue to, you know, value them in their life while they're alive and then, you know, try to be like them, well, during their life as well as after their passing. As always, I go over and I don't have time. Did you have any questions? Just real quick, since... No? Okay. No? Okay. So let's do our final prayers. If somebody can again tell me where the final prayers are. Let's see, daily prayers. Hang on, it's going to be here somewhere. Hmm? 36. Oh, it's right there. Okay. So dedication prayers. So we will do... Yeah, let's just do the dedication prayers and short life, long life prayer for His Holiness, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And then we'll do the Tara Mantra for Geshe-la's long, happy life. Right? Because that's the instruction from his teacher. Okay. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long.
And then finally, the last mantra at the bottom of that page, 37, seven times. Om Tare Tu. Oh, what a long tune. Can somebody else do the tune? Because I do a different tune. You can sing. Who knows the Tara tune? Ha Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Thank you very much. Have a nice rest of the weekend.